It was the time of the Belgian-Congo debacle when ethnic cleansing coincided with Stephen Matthews' first police posting near the northern Rhodesia border with the Congo. During that time, and at just 21 years old, Stephen was knifed, ambushed, stoned, wounded by bow and arrow and shotgun, had his hand broken several times. Action-packed, unadulterated stories from those frantic and dangerous years are detailed in his new book, telling it all about a frankly outrageous time. It's called Murder, Witchcraft, and the Killing of Wildlife, Police Investigations at the Heart of Africa. It's out now. It's by Stephen Matthews. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, Stephen himself. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. Whereabouts are you today, by the way? Where are you in Africa at the moment, or where are you?
We're in China at the minute.
Ah, marvellous. Okay, well, good afternoon to you in that case.
So, yeah, ni hao. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit then about how you came to be in northern Rhodesia. Presumably, this was the late 50s, early 60s.
Well, it was. I did my business training in London, and I'd helped design a chair given by Prince Philip to the Ghana government. And when I took it to the Crown agents, they suggested I might like to consider joining the colonial police in northern Rhodesia, now Zambia. And that's how I came to go. They were concerned that there weren't enough African members being promoted. And that was the whole reason that I went out there.
And what was it like when you touched down there? What were your first impressions of being in Africa?
First of all, we landed in Lake Victoria, and it was the heat. Your nose was burning, but it was wonderful. It was really wonderful. It was a whole scene of Africa. There were animals, there were palm trees, there was the lake. It was incredible.
And what was it like then, starting off as a young police? You were only 21 years old, starting off as a young police inspector.
Yes, we did 6 months training where we had to learn the language. You couldn't get promoted unless you could speak the African languages. So that's one thing we did. Then we had to learn law and then weapon training and all sorts of things like that before you got posted. And then you got posted to a particular place. And as is the way with all military organizations, they asked me, where did I want to go? And I said, I want to go to an African village. And in return, they posted me to an African township.
Right. Whereabouts was it? And tell me a little bit about what was happening just across the border as well, in the Belgian Congo, as it was then.
Yes, it was just heading for independence. And I went, first of all, to a place called Tchingola, which is on the copper belt. And it was a beautiful city, but I soon got moved over to the mining district called Inchanga, where they mine copper. And later, Tchingola was only something like 25, 30 miles from the Congo border. And then gradually, I was spending more and more time up there. And it was quite incredible, quite incredible.
So tell me a little bit about what sort of cases you had to contend with, because you not only had the normal law and order situation, but you also had the wildlife situation as well.
Yes, in the end, I did 125 cases. I prosecuted 125 different cases for wildlife. That's elephants, rhinos, whatever. And it involved everybody, Africans, British, South Africans, Greeks, everybody. It was just horrific in that regard. But I also started to specialize with witchcraft murders. I'd had a couple which I was quite successful with, and of course then whenever a witchcraft murder came up, I was inclined to be called to deal with it. And I had a team of Africans who spent all the time with me, seven Africans and one African administrator, They were incredible. They were brave, they were loyal, and they were highly intelligent. Can you believe that out of seven, 49, each one, the total could speak 49 different languages. That Zulu, Swahili is two languages. We could cover most of Africa if we had to.
When you say witchcraft murders, just explain a little bit to the audience what you mean by this. Is this murders as part of something happening during a ceremony, or was this somebody would invoke witchcraft and another person would go out and murder somebody because of a bad business deal or a family argument?
No, it was usually quite clear cut, so to speak. One I had was a witch. She was a well-known witch, but she was getting older, and her daughter wanted to take over, and the old lady wouldn't allow it. So they got all the family together, and they took the old lady off to the local beer hall and got her absolutely drunk, and then they just disemboweled her, and that was that. But witchcraft is very difficult to investigate because people are so frightened that you've got to go so carefully at it and keep plodding and looking for the forensic evidence.
I mean, at the same time, it must have been an interesting time because you mentioned the Belgian Congo, and the Congo was heading towards independence. Zambia was heading towards independence as well. So I suppose on the one side, you had the people that you were working with who were progressive, who were looking at forging a new Africa. And then you had the others who were back in this whole witchcraft and the old ways of doing things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you also had things like the mercenaries. I was in the Congo while on a patrol, and you could hear the African drums. And I had one guy in our team who could speak the language of the drums. And he got very concerned because it's the phraseology. It was the message was, come to the party. We're holding a party. It wasn't. It was an ambush. We got out of that, and along the line, we ran into some mercenaries, Belgian Congo mercenaries, and the ambush was for them, and we were able to save them from annihilation, really.
Because, I mean, the Belgian Congo conflict was a particularly nasty situation, wasn't it?
It was horrific. And we also, the militia were difficult because what they were doing, they would come into northern Rhodesia, steal cattle or elephants and drive them all back or take the tusks to help fund their mercenary activities. And at one place I was told that they were missing the Italian priest. And we went down to where his place was, and it was virtually burnt, and we found part of his body in the means, and then I found his arm in the fridge, which had been partly eaten by a cannibal. So we got the cannibal, then the Belgian Congo mercenaries pitched up and they strung him up. I didn't have a chance to do anything about it, but that just shows you what was happening all the time.
Brutal, to put it mildly. And also, you know, we live in an age now where conservation and wildlife are very much to the forefront. Of course, back in the day, not so much. And you described it as a slaughter of wildlife in all its forms. And you just said about people poaching elephants for ivory to fund their activities.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, in those days, it was almost like smoking. Everybody was smoking. Everybody was hunting. It was only later that people like me and others said, look, this is no good. It's going to end up with wildlife being decimated. And so gradually it stopped. And can you believe that at one stage, the game department of the country had an award ceremony for people that were stopping or getting involved with the stopping of wildlife atrocities. And my award, where I was called forward to the podium, was an elephant tusk.
For stopping wildlife? You were given an elephant tusk for, yes, stopping wildlife?
So, yeah, with my name on.
Oh,
yeah.
good grief. Quite a violent as well situation for you. I mean, just reading through your list of injuries, knifed, ambushed, stoned, wounded by bow and arrow and shotgun. I mean, it's a wonder you're actually having this conversation, to be honest with you, Stephen.
I felt that. But even more so because previously, I come from Guernsey, and when the Germans invaded Guernsey, my family was shipped off to a concentration camp in Germany. And I had my hand broken there by a guard. I was beaten up. I got mauled by a dog. Africa was just a continuation.
What was the most frightening for you personally situation, and what was the case that brought you the most pride?
That's difficult to say. The one that scared me more than anything else was I got ambushed. I was coming back from a meeting towards where we had the offices at night, and I was ambushed by a group, and it was only because I had my dog with me, this enormous Doberman called Alex, that we got out of it. Very lucky indeed. And I was helped by an African man who joined in the fray to try and save us. Very lucky.
And the case you're most proud of, the case that gave you the most contentment of a job well done?
Very difficult to say. I think we had so many. I think there was one, it was a fraud case that was very, very difficult. And it was a South African, it was a British guy who ran off to South Africa. And the South African government then were involved with apartheid, and they wouldn't release him. And I thought, this is no good at all. And I went down and I had a go with the South African embassy and others. And in the end, they let him go, brought him back, and he pleaded guilty. There was very little else he could do.
Yeah. How long were you in Northern Rhodesia, now it's Zambia, for? Were you there for the independence, or was it just a shorter period of time?
Yeah, it was just that after independence, we retired because you weren't wanted anymore. And I couldn't leave my poor old dog there, so I had him crated up and sent back to Guernsey. And we lived together happily for many years. He was a great character. He loved fishing. He would put his paw on the line so he could feel the fish strike. And he loved piano. He loved piano music. If I had the piano music on, he would come and lie down alongside me. But he had his favourite composers. Rachmaninoff was his favourite.
A Doberman who likes Rachmaninoff. Now I think I've heard everything. Have you been back? Did you go back to Zambia at all? Or was that just one chapter of your life? Which sounds like it's been quite a move from just the borders of Guernsey.
Yes, I've been back to many African countries working, but I've never been back to Zambia. I would have liked to have gone, but it just never happened.
So what made you decide then to put this all down in a book now? Why? Because you have a bit of time over there in China, or you just thought there were so many fantastic stories that you couldn't resist the temptation to put pad to paper or finger to keyboard, as it were?
Yeah, I wrote a book called The Day the Nazis Came, which is about the German experience. And then I had a couple of interviews on BBC Radio, and there was a response. We mentioned the dog, and there was a response from the listeners who said, for goodness sake, get on and write about the dog and Africa. We're interested. And that's how it came about.
And what was it like revisiting some of those ideas? I mean, a fascinating snapshot of a world, obviously, that no longer exists. And that time, turbulent, African independence, mercenaries in the Congo, witchcraft, yes, Elephant poaching. I mean, it's all there.
It is. And even down to the United Nations Secretary General, his plane crashed. And I went out as well on a search party to try and find it. It was all there, continuous. It was almost 24-7.
Almost 24-7. Sounds like it was almost 25-7. Well, the book...
Yes, the
book is called Murder, Witchcraft and the Killing of Wildlife, Police Investigations at the Heart of Africa. It's by Stephen Matthews. Stephen, if people want to find out more about you, is there a web page? I mean, or can they just find...
Yeah, there is... In the book, there is a website. I get about 4 to 5 messages a week for the German book and the African book, and I reply personally to each one of them.
And I mean, how did you end up with speaking to you by the wonders of technology? And it's on audio. You can't see me, which is probably a good thing on a Monday morning, but I can see you. And it looks like you've got a rather splendid place over there in China. How did you end up over in China?
Well, my wife is Chinese. So Susan is my IT manager, my best friend, and she looks after me, and that's how we all come to be here. Yeah.
Well, she's an excellent IT manager.
We live in France in the summer, and we come to China in the winter.
Well, it sounds like you have the best of all worlds, and thanks, Stephen, for putting us together via IT, because we had a bit of a cross wire to begin with on the beginning of this show. The book is called Murder, Witchcraft, and the Killing of Wildlife: Police Investigations at the Heart of Africa. It's by Stephen Matthews. Stephen, it's been, well. Just a question: what are you up to next, then?
I've written another book about the dog. It's called My Boy Alex, Witch Doctor and Crime Fighter, and I'm waiting to see if that will get published.
Well, we'll definitely speak to you about that one, because Alex sounds like a complete character. This book, however, with a cameo appearances by Alex, is called Murder, Witchcraft and the Killing of Wildlife. It's by Stephen Matthews. Stephen, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Giles, for your time today.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Giles, for everything. Lovely to speak with you.